off the ball.
Rugby.
Did he need minutes?
No, he played the last two games. He played a long shift from Bayern. He did not need minutes. And this is not being wise after the event. I didn't want to tempt fate when the team was landed on Friday. I saw in the preview. And then I remember looking at the first couple of seconds. Why is he at the bloody all-weather pitches? Part of me hates them.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Hurling Pod
on Off the Ball
with Apple Green, making every journey better.
Still getting used to that new intro, kicked in a little bit too early last week. The Hurling Pod here on Off the Ball with thanks to Apple Green, helping you relax, recharge and enjoy the journey ahead. What a weekend it's been. The defending Division A champions Cork have now won 7 league games in a row. They had 7 points to spare against Tip in front of a record crowd of 31,000 at Porky Cueve on Saturday night. Perhaps better remembered for the Malie. Good news financially for both Tip and Cork, by the way. Limerick got their first competitive win since last May, seeing off Kilkenny by 7 points as well. And a Reuben Halloran inspired Waterford had 6 points to spare over Offaly as the Dacia moved on to 4 points after 3 games. Plenty of drama in Division 1B as well. Well, Clare and Wexford made it 3 wins from 3. But the real story here, Kildare's win against Antrim, that is a first victory for the Lily Whites in the second flight for 48 years. And it has left Antrim potentially in danger of being relegated down to the third flight for next season. James Skell, how are you?
I'm very good, lads. How are things?
Good, good. Paul Murphy, how are you?
Great, lads. Brilliant. Yep.
Let's not bury the lead for the viewers as opposed to the listeners here. James Cahill is kitted and ready to go for the Patriots tonight. How difficult has it been to leave a Super Bowl ticket just kind of sitting there across the bar? This feels a bit like, I presume you've seen the movie Good Will Hunting.
Yes.
Basically it's like, you know, I just slide my ticket across the bar and just accept. And they knew, my friends knew that I had to go see about a girl.
Yeah.
You had to go see about a boy.
I did have to go see about a boy. And look, the first time was very hard, 7 years ago. When my first girl was born, she was born on the 26th of January. Uncle had a ticket for ready to go. Then he sends me a picture the night before the Super Bowl. He's having dinner with Tony Romo and Jerry Jones, right? Then today, I was just feeling okay about myself today. The young lad was kind of going a bit hairy. You know, things. The house is a bit frantic today. I get a picture then today, and the picture is of the Super Bowl pre-party tickets, pre-game parties with the Patriots, and he's got 6 of them, and he goes, one of these is yours. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh, no.
But why would you do it to me? And he does it, like, the man is in his 70s, right? He's my uncle. He's a great dude. He does it thinking, this is what I did for you. But he's actually, he's just killing me. Yeah. That's what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, oh, Jesus.
Is he insanely connected if he can get a table with Jerry Jones and Romo?
Oh, insane. Like, my uncle then, one of my cousins, he was having dinner last night with, Adam Vinatieri. Like, do you know what I mean? Do you remember the kicker?
One of the best kickers of all time.
One of the best kickers inducted into the Hall of Fame this year, they're having dinner at Vinatieri. I mean,
no way.
Then the two cousins take a picture and they're with the cheerleaders. You know what I mean? It's like, just stop. Like, just stop. Like, just please. What you're doing is upsetting me even more. You know, meanwhile, my uncle flipping shits, he's nappy and I have to go change it. It's like, what? Oh, jeez.
Before we go any further, don't have too much sympathy for this man and his fear of missing out. He's going to be fine. He'll get his snacks. He'll watch the Super Bowl later on. He'll hope that the Patriots overcome the Seahawks, win a 7th Lombardi trophy, all that. But more importantly, the only reason you're not at Levi's Stadium is because you have your firstborn boy.
Yeah, the first Cahill boy born in 38 years.
So like,
yeah, quite a lot. And just quite a lot on these shores, should I say, more.
They needed to spread you out, though, to be fair. Like, you can't have too many of them bar too close together. Like,
that's a great one, actually. It's super. Yeah, look, it's been a really good week, I have to say. It's been a tiring week. It's been a week of adjustment, I will say that, because a person told me one time, I may have said it on the podcast before, one child is like one, two is like 1,000, okay? 3 and 4 is like, whoa, it's just different levels. They're gone different directions. You haven't got enough arms and legs. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just they've you heavily outnumbered. The decibel level increases to a level that sounds like a fucking Concorde inside the house every day. You know what I mean? You can't hear nothing for all the crying and screaming. Oh yeah. So look, but anyways, hey, life is rosy. Will, life is rosy. Pats from the Super Bowl. We're going to do it tomorrow morning. Won't be bet. Don't get me wrong. 4 kids on top of me. But when we win the 7th Lombardi, I'd be Gucci. I'd be all good. Don't you worry.
Why have you called him Joey?
Again, family connections. You know, okay. my father and my uncle's second name was Joseph. My cousin, he passed away in America, was Joseph. So we said, you know what, we'll go with the Joey. And I liked the name of it. And I wanted to keep the initials JS as well. I didn't want to name him James. Grace mentioned James. I said, no, not doing that to him. I'm not setting up straight away. Like, you know. So we went to Joey. I like the ring to it.
Sorry, Murphy, you were about to kick in there.
I wasn't at all. Well, actually, all I was going to say was that they'll make the connection through Skehill alone anyway. It's not a case that he's like Joey Murphy, where it's like, ah, he could be, once they hear Skehill, they know.
Surely
related.
Absolutely.
One of our good friends of the pod, the man I call the OG, Tiago Silva, was in contact, our Brazilian in Limerick. He was really worried that we weren't going to come back, first of all. So he said he was checking the date from last season just to make 100% sure that we didn't start maybe a little bit earlier, a little bit later. Yeah. Then he saw it popped up in his podcast feed. He had a listen. He went along in the YouTube and threw a few comments on there as well. He saw that little baby Joey Scale had arrived, and he said the inspiration, Scale, is that he's going to plough on and try and have a boy now. He's got three girls as well.
Jeez. Yeah, now if
you advised him directly, I went into the WhatsApp and I said, the OG has said this, what's your advice to him?
Yeah, and I did use the words, keep plowing, I think it was the words I probably used, probably in that kind of tone as well. that's a dangerous character to play now. Yeah, he just needs to think about it, really think about it. I can't tell you the amount of shit I Googled, like what foods I should be eating, you know, if I should be exercising much, should I be wearing tight jeans, you know. What positions to do. I was doing all this. What temperature should be in the room? You know, I was doing all this Googling, right? And I forgot it all. I don't know how we got it right. Simple as that.
What positions to enhance conception is a whole different podcast. That might be one for the members.
My Google search now, that would actually open your eyes. Nothing bad, but just the how...
What creates the conditions for a boy?
How broad it is, like. You know what I mean? I could go from, like... Do I have to pay preliminary tax in Ireland? Yes. Munster bovine. You know, movable GA goalposts. You know, sheer fitness band and slow. I had so many. Stephen Cluxton, time taken freeze. That was one I had too. Because Jared McCarthy. You know, that's where it came from, Stephen Cluxton. He was a minute. So let's put that out there. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
I got a feeling we'll get to that. The other thing I wanted to confirm from the comments last week, straight to the Spotify, Ciara Herity. I'm presuming wife of David Herity, Murph.
Correct, yeah.
A long-time listener and a mother, I really enjoyed this one. And also another female listener called MCC said, you've got lots of women listening to this pod.
Brilliant.
So we weren't talking shite at the end of it, saying there's actually a nice gender mix. I've checked the back end of the podcast as well. It is it's closer to 50-50 than I thought it was.
Really?
Not what I expected.
I would have said a strong 80-20 in favour of males. I wouldn't think it was actually females at all. That's
100% what I expected.
Okay.
Experience in person as well. Just bumping into people who hear us.
Yeah.
Far more than I would have expected.
Yeah, yeah. I actually find it interesting when people say to you that, like, you be in random places and people say it. I just find that because, you know, the way we record it here and it's just the three of us and you're sitting at your kitchen table or scale, you're upstairs, wherever, will you have your whole... perfect recording studio there, yeah. But in your room in Tullamore or home in Tullamore, but you forget then, it just gets put out and you forget about it then. But like you meet people then who will say to you, getting on a train or going into a pub or something, I find that funny. I find that very peculiar. Like, but and it also shows how far reaching it is. But yeah, it's great.
Do you forget sometimes what you say to us?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Completely. Yeah, so if the public catch me about something I say, I'm like, did I actually say that? I don't know if I say it. I have a clue.
What's funny is like somebody might take exception to something you said, you know, 10 podcasts ago, and they remember it, but you don't remember it. And it could be a very throwaway comment, but then they'll bring it up to you, and you're standing there going, gee, I don't remember that at all, yeah. Because it wasn't meant with any malice, but the listener might take it as malice. So, yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of us people just come up having conversations around the pod. So one of the train conductors in Tullamore is a Tipperary fan who now lives in Westmeath but works in Tullamore train station. Talks to me all the time about Tip. Last year when Tip went flying, he was mad keen to talk about the pod every time I walked by him or walked past him if I was coming home in the evening. I bumped into someone. I was getting coffee on Friday on the way home from work and someone just walked over and went, oh yeah, I love the hurling pod. What scale are you like?
I was donating blood last year and the lad who was taking my blood was a Carlow man. And he was like, yeah, sit down there, blah, blah, taking blood and all this stuff. And he had his head down and like the blood was coming out into the oak and he was going, You didn't mention Carlo on the pod there the other night. They actually had a I was like, Jesus Christ, I wasn't expecting that. And he wasn't even looking at me when he said it. And I was like, geez, this is the, I don't know, the last place. I suppose doctors who take blood also listen to it. But yeah.
Oh, days. And what a time when a tube is in your arm to see the pressure of somebody wondering why you haven't
talked to him. Your man's extracting blood from me. And then he's also telling me that he took exception to not mentioning Carlo. It's like, this is a dangerous position to be in.
You thought, Skell, we were going to get about 25,000 into Páirc Uí Chaoimh on Saturday night. It surpassed that. 25,000, I think, were sold by Wednesday or Thursday, so we knew it was going to be north of that. 31,000 is a new record, so it's for a standalone hurling fixture in the league at this point, where we're not talking about multiple league finals and so on at the one time. 31,000 is a new record crowd, which is quite remarkable. It gave the whole night a kind of a championship feel. I did like that the stadium announcer also announced Tipperary on as the All-Ireland champions. There was a lot of pomp and ceremony before the game started. But what did you make of Cork 29, Tipperary 22? Is it too simplistic to say, first half was interesting, two red cards seemed to redirect the game?
So first of all, it was definitely a league game. You know what I mean? If you took this game now, I know there was night time. If you put it on any time of the year, years to pass, I would say that was definitely a league game. I just had that feel about it. Both teams went out and they went out intense, I would say. But you have to understand, I'd say, what level of work have both teams done in the last 5-6 weeks? You know, in terms of getting sharpness up, in terms of it's obviously very fitness orientated, S&C orientated, new players, etc. So for the time of year we're at, like in the second week in February, whatever it is, you know, we got what we expected, to be fair. And I think it was a good enough game. It's just that I thought it was awful, like, loose. You know, one thing that stood out for me was, you know, there was 25 out of the 28 points from play. Do you know what I mean? In the first half. That's a crazy statistic, Les. It was 16-12 at halftime, wasn't it? 25 of those points were from play. That's mad. Like, you would never see that in a championship game. Never. You just wouldn't, because it wouldn't be allowed to happen. Do you know what I mean? It just wouldn't happen, whereby you get so many opportunities to play. And it's kind of where the way, and probably it's a grander thing I want to talk about in terms of hurling in general. Every team seems to be playing the same way, whereby their half-back line to half-forward line, that, those 8 boys, it's a free-for-all for whoever wants to attack and shoot. You know what I mean? It's a question of possession in that space versus, you know, the 50-50 demand battle like we had in years previous in games. Like, that day seems to be gone. The only 50-50 battle you see nowadays is a cornerback and cornerforward. That's it. You know, maybe a fullback and full-forward. You don't see any more 50-50 battle with the ball rained down top of them. So it's very kind of congested in the middle. It's a pure space game. Space games in the likes of February, March can warrant a game like this, where there's just so many shots, so many opportunities, you know, very open, not exactly intense, etc. So, because teams don't have the sharpness as of yet. Like, you yourself, you need 10, 12, 14 weeks to get that sharpness into your game. That doesn't come 6 weeks back on the pitch. That comes 5 months where you get off the championship race. And the game was, I enjoyed the game. I thought it had a few good moments, per se. I was intrigued to watch certain players in certain positions. Like I said, O'Leary, Darragh O'Leary and William Buckley, want to see how they go on. You know, Johnny Ryan, Oisín Donoghue, watching those guys. And, you know, they gave you something. They gave you something to think about, something to talk about in terms of, are they going to replace some players on the teams at the moment? You know, are they going to replace them? You know, I'm saying Robert Doyle, for example, I'm saying, I know Patrick Horgan's gone, but we spoke about Declan Dalton last week. So there was a lot of questions raised, a few answers, but again, I think we got what we expected, to be honest. I think it's fair to say.
I think so. It was loose, Murph. There was a lot of loose shooting in the first half as well. I know at one point Darren Maloney was praising it. He was saying, oh, they've gone 15 and 15 and whatever. I don't know if that was exactly true, though, because, like, Willie Connors was still playing as a screener. No. It was like it wasn't a 15 on 15 battle, which is being portrayed in the commentary sometimes.
No, it wasn't. And I think as well, see, it's hard because I've watched the last the two Cork matches, or the three Cork matches, but I've watched particularly Galway and the Tipperary match. You're watching them at home, so you can't really see the formation or how they're setting up. But from what I'm hearing, Rob Downey is sitting back quite a bit from that central position. And, like, even the other night, it was obvious enough that, you know, he was letting whoever was rotating through the centre forward position, be it Armand or whoever, or Jake Morris, whoever was out there, he was letting them drift out the field, because the way they were kind of, this is what I'm taking from it, the way they were looking at it was that they were kind of leaning more towards protecting the goal and congesting that area, and then, you know, trying to create the space down the far end of the field. And this is something that Cork seemed to be wanting to do at the moment. The only thing, and I didn't actually mention it last week, particularly from the Galway match, the only thing that, like, I'd be wondering about is that Galway managed to get 7 points ahead of them at one stage, and we're still hitting wides. You know, potentially could have pushed that out to 8 or 9. 7 points is achievable, but when we start to go to 8 or 9, when we start to get drift into the area of where, okay, are you going to do a tactical overhaul here now? Are you going to change how you actually set up? And that's the one thing I'm looking at with Cork at the moment, that for both sides, yeah, there were, it was loose enough on Saturday night. You know, there was a lot of open play, and those really hard questions weren't asked of either team about their setup, about different things. But I think when a team comes along and asks that about Cork, it'd be interesting to see what to do. It's just a point. It's just, you know, I just see that happening where there is a big structure thing that Cork look like they want to do, and they want Rob Downey potentially to sit there. And I'm completely open for correction on that. But because Galway were able to maybe rack up a few scores on them, and like Tipperary started really well on Saturday night as well, I actually looked at them and said, these lads look really sharp. I think they could really kick on. And then Cork grew into the game and started taking off really good scores. But it was interesting for that period that I often think when teams are really trying to go towards a structure, and this is the time to be doing it, like the league is the time to do this and trying to get it in. But there's always a question that if you're going to lean on a structure, and the structure is going to be, well, this is the way we want to hurl in every match going forward, we're not going to tailor it for another team, this is the way we want to hurl, what happens if that really gets torn apart one of the days? So that's one of the things I'd be wondering about. But yeah, look, I mean, the first 10 minutes, Tipperary were picking off scores there. They seemed to have loads of space. The hurling was really sharp. They were popping the ball around. And then Cork just got to grips with it, and then Cork started pinging off their own scores at the end. But there was a nice bit of open play about it. It was enjoyable. There was a nice bit of intensity as well. I know we'll get to the melee in a minute, but I think building up to that melee, the game didn't actually have that feel about it, that it was actually going to break out into a row. Or, you know, I didn't get that feeling where something like that was going to happen. So I thought it was a really good match up until that. And I thought, look, I'm happy enough with the overall standard match. I'm actually really happy with it for a league match at this stage as well, because sometimes we can build these games up and they turn into nothing. Do you know, like, as in two teams go out, they don't want to show their hand, and it kind of falls flat in its face. So it was a really good match for that. And then, of course, as well, there's the black card to talk about. Like, again, Will, you can tell us when you want us to talk about these things, but for me, it wasn't.
No, you've teed it up nicely for yourself. The black card's not a black card.
It's not. And I'm actually... This is probably hot take of the night, or thing, you know, let people argue with me. I'd be more upset about the black card than I would about the two red cards, because for me, Johnny Ryan, he should be allowed to go and tackle a player. Like, the black card shouldn't take away from an honest tackle being put in on a player. Mm-hmm. And I maybe just thought there's two things happen. Maybe Liam Gordon misinterpreted, and I'm not going to talk and not be patronizing to Liam Gordon there. Maybe he misinterpreted, but he didn't pull him down. And my understanding is that's why it was there, that he pulled him down. Johnny Ryan went to make a tackle on him, and a defender should always be able to make a tackle if it's an honest tackle, you know, free of fear that you're going to get a black book in case your man falls over. You know, like Mikey Carey got a black book, and what he pulled at, was it Garrod Hegarty? No, it wasn't Garrod Hegarty. Whoever it was going in anyway, he did pull at their arm, and, you know, it was a pull down. Black book, no problem. But I feel bad for Johnny Ryan there, that, you know, but justice was done at the same time. It was saved, so kind of balanced out. But I wouldn't like to see more of them being given.
I was mindful last night because I'd watched Wexford Carlow just before, and I was thinking about some of the black cards the week before, and because this is a purely hurling week and more games are on the TV, we got to see a little bit more this week, and I was wondering, was that my own confirmation bias scale about the amount of black cards that would be given out? But realistically, they were all over the place this weekend, and these, again, were not being issued last season, and I think we've seen an honest mistake by Gordon when it came to that. But it's definitely not a pull down. It's definitely not a reckless use of a hurley. He is trying to hold up the attacker who is running at him, and I think Johnny Ryan was very unlucky to be put in the bin.
I agree with you. I think even in real time, okay, when I saw it in real time, it could have fooled me a little bit. When you have the ability for a replay or further discussion, you say, no, it wasn't the black card. The black card was brought in to rule out cynical fouls. Cynical fouls are fouls that are done completely on purpose to stop a goal scoring opportunity taking place. So if this was another sport like soccer, for example, if it was a one-on-one defender versus attacker, and the defender is both side, and he tackles the attacker, it's yellow card. And it goes down. Do you know what I mean? Let's say he misses the ball, it goes down. If the attacker is goal side and the defender pulls him down, red card. Do you know what I mean? So I would put that in the same classification as the black card, yellow card, and hurling. So if the defender is goal side, attacker runs at him, and he makes an attempt to tackle whatever type of tackle that is, and he goes down, yellow card. All the way around, if the attacker is goal side and the defender goes to wrap him up or rubber tackle him, pull a jersey, trip him, whatever, it's black card. I think once you can differentiate that, the public will get behind it far easier. I know we will. I know when we're looking at games now in future, and if there's a situation whereby Mossy Jones runs through a goal and Dahi Brook rubber tackles his legs, black card, no one will have a complaint. But if it's the other way around, or Mossy's running at Dahi and Dahi goes to tackle him and he falls over, you know, still a foul, yellow card, but it was given as a black, then I'd be pissed. Do you know what I mean? So I think in this situation, I just think clarity needs to be brought in, you know, around what warrants a black card. And sometimes these new rules come in, and referees are human, folks. They mightn't get the differentiation correct at times in live games. You know, angles can make a difference. Umpires might give them a different opinion. It's a tricky one, you know. And I feel like we're discussing these topics every year. This today now is the black card. Last year it could have been hand passing. Then it could be the face card. You name it, right? But the black card is the hot topic. So, but to round it off, watching the blacklist. Simple as that.
Hmm. Welcome to the National Hurling League. It's a penalty yellow card. That's what should have happened.
Correct. Yeah, penalty yellow card. I agree with you. Still a foul, but Tipton deserved to lose a man for 10 minutes. And like, did Cork rack up 5 points in the 10 minutes?
Yeah, but it also fundamentally changed Tipperary's approach. So Tip ended up pulling another attacker out deeper to try and basically flow the middle of the field. And then that left Tip very short. And that ball that Murph was talking about earlier, you know, where they were getting ball into the forwards and it was kind of sticking early on. I found after the black card that started to stop a bit. And then Cork started to turn the screw. That's not to say the Cork weren't really good. I thought they were excellent in the 10-minute spell or so after the black card. But you can't take, you can't dismiss the fact that tactically Tipperary had to change as a result of the going down to 14 men side of things. The melee itself, I don't know, Murph. I don't know how anyone gets picked out here. I know Jason Ford comes in, and when you're given a bit of a shoulder when you come in as the third man, you're always leaving yourself in trouble. But I think good luck based on the footage that we saw so far this weekend, and RT showed a fair few angles of it at half time in the game, to pick out Barrett and Ford as the two men who get the red cards.
Yeah, look, I definitely didn't see what Shane Barrett did. I think RT has kind of highlighted what Jason Ford did. Like, I mean, didn't hurt anyone. I don't know, was it a Donoghue he went in on? I think someone else said it was actually Kingston he hit, or Coleman or whoever. But yeah, he ran from a distance. He ran from about 40 yards. And then, see, the thing is that he kind of probably pegged himself out as, if you're looking at a melee, it's very hard to see what's happening. But if there's lads coming running from distance, they're now the sacrificial lambs about to go to the slaughter. You're running to the slaughter. That's essentially what you're doing. But yeah, like there was nothing to it. And I think everybody has said that there was very little to it. But I think there's a fair bit to unpack in it as well. Like, this isn't, there's a bit of a history with this in terms of, like, we mentioned it there when we're recording the members pod, all this crack that I had to look into it today just to see. It's like, why? I remember this rule. I remember Brian coming in and telling us one of the days, every so often, Brian would come into the dressing room, league match, lads, the referees, they're clamping down on this, don't do it. And that was his exact words, just don't do it. And this one was around 2018. There had been one or two incidents, I think even in club matches and different things from the previous year, that this rule had been in since around 2012 or 13. And then it had been kind of sitting on the back burner there. I don't remember it being reused. I'm talking about the third man into the melee and contributing to melee or whatever you want to call it. But around 2018, it started being locked down. And Brian just said, listen, lads, if two lads are fighting, let them off. Don't go running in, because the two boys will get two yellows and you'll get the red card. And around that time, everybody was kind of walking on ice or on thin ice. They were like, listen, not going to go running in. And it had the desired effect. Since then, we haven't really seen it being used, or maybe we just haven't seen that many melees whereby there's just handbags, nobody throws a slap, and they're looking. That was the point of it, to look to discourage this thing of players coming running in where nobody does an obvious strike. What rule can they actually put in where a lad, now it's still probably harsh enough to give a lad a straight red card over it, because the two boys really did nothing, but they were the sacrificial lambs. And the other argument that people could say is that, well, what about the other 26 players? Like, you know, at the end of the day, Alan Connolly and Willie Connors were full of you can't send off all the other lads as well. So probably what happened was just that, look, they were trying to lay down a marker for the players. They had to act and they had to do something, but there was no obvious, you know, striking or anything going on. I saw Ben O'Connor was upset about it as well. To be honest, I saw Liam Cahill going over and asking Liam Gordon at halftime, and he just seemed to be asking, what was it that happened there? Grand, okay, we'll get on with it. And then didn't seem too fussed about it. I don't see the cards being rescinded. I know Liam Sheedy said it, but I don't see it. I don't see it. Like, I mean, we've seen red cards there. Was it last year, Offaly and Waterford? Was that last year? Was the year before? The shoulder to the head that wasn't a shoulder to the head, didn't get contact. I think Alan Tynan. Yeah. Alan Tynan's one on Keane Kenny that didn't make contact, that wasn't rescinded. So I don't think these will be rescinded. But the bottom line is, I just think the two boys were sacrificial lambs. They had to pick someone. And the other argument is to be said, and this is a point, which is a point for conversation. This was the game spilling over. Like, this is the most physical representation of the game spilling over. 30 players inside. Granted, no slaps were thrown or no dirty digs. But you have to question what's going to happen after this. Like, if you just go, right, lads, we're going to get on with it and throw in the ball. Let's say, hypothetically, there's a dirty stroke. And let's say we're sitting here this morning talking about Willie Connors has a broken leg, touch wood and all this stuff, Willie Connors, or we're talking, you know, Rob Downey or whatever. The conversation we're having then is that the referee and the officials lost control of the game. And they'll point back towards the melee and say, why didn't you do something there? So I think Liam Gordon and them took decisive action. And I wouldn't be that upset. I'm a neutral, though. So Cork and Tipperary fans might feel different, but it's the whole thing is messy. Like, players shouldn't be running like that anyway. I've been involved in it myself. Shouldn't have been doing it. I think back to ones there. We played Tipperary in the park. League final, I think it was. JJ ended up boxing Lark Corbett on the ground. Two boys got sent off. And, like, you just kind of get on with it. But you know it's the player's fault. We're all running in, hitting each other, shunts, whatever. So it is a messy one to unpack. I think the referees and the officials' biggest mistake was the 3 minutes. That nobody kind of kept an eye on the 3 minutes, that there wasn't that additional time. So, yeah.
The problem for me, right, in this is that some of these instances, I always use the phrase objective versus subjective, right?
Go on.
So objective is by letter of the law, it's factual, you know, it's in the rule book.
Yeah.
There's no misinterpretation, it's there in black and white. Subjective is all opinion-based, right?
Mm.
So it feels like to me that the red cards last night were subjective, they were opinion-based. They were like
a decision
by the referee to try and keep control. So he or she can make a decision on the pitch for the betterment of the game. But then if an incident happens, like where a lad's hurdle might hit a head or a face guard gets caught in the hand, then it becomes objective. And it's fact. It's fact in the rule book, red card.
My
issue is that, what are we? Are we objective or are we subjective? A referee, for me, has to be objective, right? 99.9% of the time. Whereas in this situation, when a row takes, and the level of, I use the word damage, was zero. It was zero, to be honest. The biggest thing that happened was the time wasted, as you said, the time lost in the game. You know, so book the two boys, move on. You know, move on. There wouldn't be a word said in the crowd. You know what I mean? And if another incident happened later on, treat that objectively. Then treat that as a red card or a yellow card, whatever you want to call it. You know, if another incident happens, treat that as an individual incident, not as a pool of incidents caused by the row earlier on. So sport is riddled with that kind of stuff, though, lads. Especially hurling, like, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, look at the Yanks. Yanks would fucking have a fight there. Have at it, lads.
They're ice hockey.
Yeah. Have at it. Until you fall on the ground, we're not going to break you up. And once you get 2 minutes in the bin, back at it.
See, the reason you're a big advocate for this is the famous American brawl that you ran 100 yards and milled a Dublin fella out of it. So
I hit the wrong Dublin fella, as I recall.
Hit the wrong Dublin fella. So I don't expect you. Yellow card. I should have got... What did you... You didn't get anything for that.
I got nothing. I got banned respectively.
What did you?
Are you banned from the next Boston Sevens? Is that what happens?
I shouldn't go back to the next Boston Sevens. I was banned.
So you're grand.
Yeah, finished. So my ban is served. So
you're banned from the Boston Sevens. Holy God.
Yeah. Four got banned. That's it. Four people got banned.
Did they carry over into hurling over here? No.
Do they carry
continent? You can't.
I'd have to check my records. I have a letter there somewhere from the GAA. I can't remember. But like it was November, December, so there was no Ireland to play.
So you're grand, yeah.
Was it even 15 aside? Probably was it?
It was the 11s, Murph.
How could you get suspended from that? Like, how could that carry into it? We were playing 11 aside hurling on a baseball field or
an exhibition match. Yeah.
Because I wasn't sent off, Murph, I remember in the letter, it was something about bringing the association into disrepute, something like that.
Mm.
You know, whatever wording they use, you know.
Yeah.
That was fucked.
For anyone who missed it last week, maybe I should bring this to the main pod listeners because they might not be a member. If you are, you get it all. But if you're not, this may be the place to announce it. James Gale is finished with hurling, at least for now. You've retired entirely.
Yeah, good, yeah. From senior club, yeah, finished. Like, as I said before, like, you've got some guys that will play until they're in their 40s and 50s. That's just not me. I'm done. Move on, next thing. Simple as that. So I have other prizes I want to put my eyes on will... try and make a few pounds out of something as opposed to losing money on hurling and losing limbs and losing dipping energy and bones breaking. So,
I know. There's part of me that kind of thought, you know, goalkeeper, and we know many goalkeepers, particularly in club teams around the country, who play for many, many years because that position can save you a little bit.
But as I said before, we have two goalkeepers in the club who are in their very early 20s. And I just think it's wrong of me, right, to occupy a position that they're going to occupy guaranteed. So get out of the way and let them thrive, you know what I mean, when they're in their youngest years. Because a concern of mine would have been, if I stayed trudging along here, and believe me, there was a couple of years left in the body, no problem. But what happens if I lose one of the goalkeepers, he goes off abroad, you know, goes off to a different club, that would be shit, you know what I mean? So get out of the way, let them battle it out then. You know, that was one of the, another big, I suppose, part of the decision, you're going to call it that. Plus, I have any amount of, life form to keep alive around the place here in terms of children and cattle. So I said, I better spend more time at home.
Yeah, to me it sounds like a sensible decision indeed. So Alan Connolly hitting 8 of those Cork points during the game, 4 of them coming from frees. Dara Fitzgibbon was very good, 7 points, 1 free. Owen Connolly took over 4 frees after he came on for Tipperary. Dara McCarthy scored 2 from frees, and Jake Morris, their captain, scored 3 points, 2 of them from play and 1 of them from a free. Which brings us around very nicely to the time that's being taken on these frees. After the game, Liam Cowell was speaking on Off the Ball. Murphy says, I don't care how long Dara McCarthy takes to take a free. He pops it over, that's all I care about. He also made the very fair point that Tipperary were chasing the game at the time that he was taking the frees. Some of the Cork fans were booing him. I saw Ashley Maloney, the Tipperary ladies footballer, making the point that it was very, very uncouth that you've got Cork fans who are booing this young forward who's just getting down to do his free routine. Do you have a problem with how long Dara McCarthy takes to take frees?
No, not in the slightest. I think I've seen it somewhere. It's been mentioned maybe a week ago or 2 weeks ago. I think they're all around the same. Like last year, Patrick Horgan, TJ himself, they're all around the same.
So to give proper credit, Paul Carroll from Tip FM went back and rewatched a few All-Ireland finals and timed some of the other, I'd say, main free takers, is how I put it. And basically, they were all coming in around the 20-second range.
But even before that, even before someone sat down and did that, I never even noticed that or Dara McCarthy might be taking too long, or that Patrick Horgan might. I have no issue with it whatsoever. I was surprised. I didn't know whether there were maybe a bit of booing because of the red card last year. Like, I actually didn't know, but I did notice the boos. But yeah, it's pointless. Like, I mean, he's actually taking them fairly quickly, all things considered. Like, he gets down to it. He has a routine. Every free taker worth their salt has a routine. His one might be a little bit more, he stands back and he quite obviously steps in over it and all this crack, but he's average in terms of length. He's not long, he's not short, he just takes them. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a null point altogether. I have no issue with it.
Yeah. What do you think, Scott?
I think we should go back further in the game. As I was saying earlier, like, look back at Stephen Cluxton. If you're allowing a goalkeeper to come out, and I'm talking football, but I'm still talking GAA, so the rules apply in similar instances here. So, like, It's a done thing now where most goalkeepers in football come out and they take the long range frees. And long range frees in football is not 100 yards, it's 50 yards. So they have to cover the 100 yards to get up the pitch. So and they're allowed to do so, right? Because it's a bit of a spectacle for the game. And you go back to Ireland final, the Cluxton played with Kerry. You'll tell me the year now against Kerry. You'll tell me the year where one chef where Dublin beat Kerry the Ireland final.
2011, the last kick of the game.
Yeah. Mark O'Shea, is it Tomás O'Shea hands in the ball?
Mm-hmm.
No, I could be correct, you know, was like a minute and 20 seconds was lost or used by Dublin, let's say, and the time wasn't added on. So, like, where Dara McCarthy takes, what, 15, 20 seconds? I have no issue with that. Again, that's just, again, go back to my situation. That's a subjective opinion. You know, like, my issue, if people want to be, you know, start barking about it, look at lads fouling the ball when they're raising it, you know?
Yeah.
Patrick Horgan always fouled the ball when he's raising it. So is Jimmy Burns. They're soloing the ball as they're raising it. So, but like, do you know what? I don't give a shit. Like, it's part of the game. I don't care. But if you want to be nitpicking on a young lad taking 21 seconds, we should be taking 17. Come on. You know, let's get a small bit real here, to be honest. Like, 21 seconds in the grand scheme of things. He might get it in 10 times during the game. He's burned 3 minutes. Ah, come on.
And realistically, sure, it could be down to referee just to add it on then. Not on your 20 seconds. They're on 25. There's no major drama with it, like.
But look at Billy Nolan comes out for Waterford. Mark Fanning comes out for Wexford.
Yeah.
Owen Murphy comes out for, he does come out to Kinney.
Yep.
He does come out. Rhys Shelley comes out for Tip. You know, Patrick Collins, they all do it, lads. You know, and the goalkeeper coming out takes way more time than Dara McCarthy would in terms of his set routine. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't think timing is the issue at all. I just think people, you know, if I want to be honest, they're nitpicking Dara McCarthy because he won the Ireland last year. He's young and they just don't like it. That's the size of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a degree of jealousy about it, if I'm honest.
I do think as well, Murph, we've all been on this, where it's frustrating where a foul is given away and it feels like the free is taking an eternity to be hit. But the reality is that's a bit of a punishment for the person who's given away the foul as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and it depends. The things you have to take into context here as well is that people only really notice it when you're a trailing team and it's the opposition team who's in front who's maybe taking a little bit longer. But, like, again, I don't see this as being a point. I can't think of anyone jumping into my mind where that they're taking liberties with how long they take in terms of taking frees, et cetera, et cetera. So, I'd agree with you. It's just an additional punishment if you're after fouling somebody that they get to take time over. Like, yeah, I just think, is there even point in having a conversation about this? There's nobody abusing this rule at the moment. And I agree with Skettle there as well. Like, I think there's an element there of yeah, a bit of jealousy. Like, Darren McCarthy had a great year last year. Maybe, like, you know, a bit of the red card coming into it. That was down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. You know, fantastic All-Ireland final as well. So maybe there's a little bit of that putting them off. I think we'd see it with other players as well. Like, you know, the odd time there, Gerard Hegarty might get a bit of it for, you know, if down below in Ennis or something, if they're playing. Gerard Hegarty now is the man who gets the brunt of that then. Like, and I'm sure there's plenty of players.
Well, where's the team from Murph? It always stems from a little bit of jealousy. It goes back to the Jordan Man phrase I've used long before. You hate him, but you love to have him.
That's it. It's because they're like such that important player where it's like you'd love to see him miss a free. Like, you know, if TJ missed a free from Kenny, there's a jeer. It's not a cheer. There's a kind of a jeer about it. Like, and then there's these players. Darren McCarthy's getting into that space now where people.
He's there.
He is. Yeah, you're right.
The minute he rattled that penalty last year in the Northern final, the minute he hit that, boom! Yeah, that kid is nervous as steel. He's arrived.
Yeah.
Well, look, I'm sure it's going to be a very different game when they meet first round of the Munster Championship, but, there were certain elements from it that I think were quite interesting on Saturday night. The other thing about the looseness in all this, Gal, as well, so Cork had 18 points in play throughout the game as well. So it wasn't just Cork being a bit loose and letting Tipperary get shot. Similarly, at the other end, it felt that Cork were able to run through them a few times during the game. I'm sure that will not be allowed when April and May come round.
God, no, because I have a stat sheet here. It looks like there's no structure to whatsoever. But the forwards, that said the unit, Cork had 18 points in the forwards unit. Tip at 5. You know, from play. So that's not great, as the lads say. Think about what Owen Connolly, the influence he came on, but from play spot. So I think you look back at this game from a Tipperary perspective and you see what Cork's strengths are. And the strength that Cork showed last night is probably a lot of the strengths that we expected them to show in the Ireland final last year. That's the kind of form they're in last year. They were in their pomp, you know what I mean? Everything was going great. Public were behind them. Like, this red wave was coming. And it was unstoppable. And it was very similar to what we thought. What we thought would happen is what happened last night. Do you know what I mean? In terms of the runners are coming through. I, in my notes, I have basically that the half-back line for Cork, the half-forward line for Cork, they work together in the sense that you often see Barrett comes back very deep. Fitzgibbon will come back deep. Apparently, he's playing. It then allows the likes of Rob Downey and his brother Owen off up the pitch. Just take off and occupy somewhere. So Owen Downey, did you shoot 2 points long range? Found himself in midfield yesterday.
Yeah.
So there's a certain freedom about the way they're playing because he knows he's got protection from behind. I see that now when the championship game comes along, that's going to be bottled up. That'll be a cauldron. That middle third, as we always call it in GA, that middle third will be an absolute war zone. And those pops from long range, those lovely runners coming off with those triangular passes, that won't happen as often as it happened last night. And it's just a cant, because if it does, Tipper will bet 10 points. Simple as that. If you've got numerical parity in the pitch, that should never happen. If you're a man down, okay, I'll say it will happen. It happened last year, obviously, with McCarthy singing off. But if you're numerical parity, that can't happen. You've got to go man toe to toe. And it just didn't happen last night. And, like, in fairness to him, Cahill said himself, they weren't at the level in terms of intensity. They just weren't at it. You know, and obviously you can look at the load during training, the players, the amount of load they have to go through, which in college we already covered. But that's just, I think he's just a victim of circumstance at the time of year right now. But I'd say come May, different kettle of fish entirely, especially at home.
Murphy, you ready for some more Ben O'Connor straight shooting from last night?
Yeah, it's such early on, I wasn't expecting it. He's catching me off guard here, but really firing from the hip. And like, it's hugely refreshing in lots of ways, but at the same time, you know, I think he got annoyed, was it because the Sunday game? I didn't watch the Sunday game last week now, but he was saying that his words were misconstrued. I don't know if they were or they weren't.
I got his quotes here. He said last week, this was in the press conference, so he did 4 or 5 interviews. He spoke to Woolley, spoke to OTB. He did the interview obviously on the pitch, where I think there was very much a press being made by Shane Dawson, which was, are you trying to kind of inject a bit of steel into your team? Are you trying to get them to maybe be a little bit less nice? And he answered them straight out. I don't think he blinked a bit in that TV interview, but as well, he's getting Roy Keane compared.
He hasn't time for blinking, I think, at the moment. Yeah.
No. So he said in the press conference afterwards, down in the halls of Páirc Uí Chaoimh, last week, my words got twisted and turned. I was speaking to you above in Galway. RT had something on. I wasn't even watching it. Something above in Dublin. There's a very Cork thing about this idea of up in Dublin. That's what they were saying. On Sunday night about one of our players, my comments were twisted and turned. What I'm on about is, and when I say soccer, red card, yellow card, technical areas, you can't go onto the field, can't get a message in. So where are we getting all this from? We're getting it from soccer. That's where we're getting it all from. They're trying to cleanse the game. And then I say cleanse the game, something like that. It's just something stupid. A little tap like that. We've got two fellas sent off outside. We're after seeing it now below on the screen. Two of them below are pulling jerseys. Two fellas that are training for the last 6 months. and that's the way they're treated, end quote. So, look, one thing that stuck out for me, Murph, before we talk about his direct quotes were, if anyone thought the Ben O'Connor teams weren't going to play on the edge a little bit, did anyone see the under-20 All-Ireland final from about 3 years ago? Mm. Where Cork went out and Offaly had this team and everyone was talking about their young forwards and what they were going to do, and Cork bullied them off the pitch. Mm. And in the spirit of hard hurling, and that's how they beat them. So we knew this was going to happen. By all reports, his new Shandrum teams took no shit either. They went out there and took care of the teams that they were playing against. Maybe that's exactly what Cork need. But I thought that Darragh Fitzgibbon was interesting too. He was speaking after the game. He said, do you know what? This is now different to what Kingston would have said to us previously, what Myler wouldn't have said to us previously, what Pat Ryan wouldn't have said to us previously. It's not like he's come in and went, you need to change your approach. But the reality is that obviously Ben O'Connor wants to get a little bit, maybe a bit of roughness, a bit of, this might be the thing that gets him over the line.
No, you're dead right. You took the words out of my mouth. Like, the few things with Ben O'Connor, like he said, one of the things he had asked with RTE was that they won the match last night or Saturday night, and he was like, yeah, we won the match and look, we have a break now, we're going down to Kilkenny there and we're going down to try and win that match there, or we're going down to win it or whatever it is. But like, usually managers in that situation say, look, we'll see how we get on and blah blah blah, like a bit more of a watery answer, to put it that way. But he's being very direct, and I think by being publicly very direct like that, I think one of the things it does, I think it provides a buffer between the players and that Cork hype that potentially may come down the tracks. Ben O'Connor is just firing from the hip and he's not taking any bullshit. And he's just saying, we're going out there to win matches. Every team is playing on the edge. It's the same for everybody, blah, blah. And like, I'm not looking at another sport, but like, so Jose Mourinho used to be very good at this. And there's managers who, they look at the manager, they don't look at the players. And this might be a deliberate tactic out of Ben O'Connor. Maybe he's just been, this is exactly how he is and he's just speaking. But I think it rubs off on the players. I think, like, maybe that no-nonsense, very direct, I think that may breed into the culture. And it's interesting you're saying there was a Kingston said that that's the way the other managers. I wouldn't have got that impression from seeing interviews of Kingston or Pat Ryan or whoever. It really is quite obvious with Ben O'Connor that this is his MO, that he just talks straight. He's no-nonsense and very steely. Like, you know, you just get it from his persona that he's just very steely. I do think it will. I think it'll go into the team. I think it'll breed into the team. And I think it'll only serve them positively, because we're talking about a team in the All-Ireland last year, last 35 minutes, and people are saying, you know, oh, will they carry it into this year? Will they, won't they? From looking at Ben O'Connor's persona, like, it looks like that he'll address that nose to nose with the players, get it out of the way and drive on. And probably the best tonic for those players is having a voice like that in the dressing room. So look, I think as, like, we're running the league now, like, for Jesus, we're running the first week of February and we've gotten some serious straight talking done. Like, come to the Munster Championship, this man is going to be killing lads, killing journalists inside. It'll be great. But yeah, he's interesting. If he's nothing else, it's very interesting to see it.
Well, he's going to keep journalists on their toes as well, because you can't get away with one or two things that happen in a couple of interviews where people are like, oh, this gives you magnificent momentum. And he's kind of gone, we've only won 3 league games. You know, cool the jets a little bit. So he's going to say what he thinks.
It is funny. Like, if you really wanted to pick it apart, there is funny, like, humorous parts there as well, where exactly, RT asked him that last night. He said, this is only a league game, you know, there's nothing to it. But then also lost his mind that the lads were sent off and so on, that, you know, they're training for 6 months, like, and they're after getting sent off. So you're like, if you really wanted to drill into it, a journalist could have an argument with him there to say, he just said 10 minutes ago that it's only a league game, but here we are. So, but I think that'll only make things more interesting.
How do I get a journalist pass, Les?
We can get you one. Do you want to go down and sit down and chat with Ben O'Connor, do you?
Wait, I think you're talking shit. I have a question here.
Just go in and start throwing shots at him. You didn't. I'm trying to think. I'd say a good game you could play is, how many times has Ben O'Connor blinked during an interview? Because in my mind, the burning vision I have of him in the interviews last night, he wasn't blinking. He was just staring at the person who asked the question, and then question answered, looked at the next that. So I've never heard him speak that much before, and it's very interesting.
In a world of banal post-match interviews as well, you mentioned last week, Murph, I really enjoyed Kieran McGeaney the week before, where, you know, he's happy enough to have a back and forth and to defend his position, and particularly if there was a claim, I think in that one, that he was telling his players to hand pass the ball over the bar. He argued he's not, and he gives them agency to do whatever they want. And in the case of O'Connor, he's gone, look, I made comments the week before, these have made headlines, I would like to clarify what I think, and this is what I think about the game, and this is why I think the hurling is going in direction maybe I'm not overly happy about, but I want to be clear, this is why I've said it. So fair play. I think it's a bit of interesting copy coming out of the weekend. It's a lot better than Manager X was delighted with his team because they won game by 7 points and they move on to the next round and that's all that matters.
It's a little bit
more interesting. We'll move along because we're already 40 minutes in now. This is after just one game.
On episode 2 of Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors podcast, the stories behind the transfers that almost happened but just about didn't. Focuses on one of the greatest of all time, Pelé.
Pelé. Baba, back to Pelé. Now what's he going to do? He's got the third! Oh, beautiful goal!
And how the Santos superstar nearly swapped Brazil for Hanover. And how a Nazi ice machine salesman nearly pulled the deal off. Dropping in your OTB football podcast feed this Monday. Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors.
Elsewhere this weekend, Division 1A, the game which you had young Joey Skell watching alongside you today, Skell, because you are the neutral. Limerick overcoming Kilkenny in the end. 126-216. I think some outlets have claimed the first own Cody goal goes to Mossy Keown. I thought it was very hard to tell whether it was a definitive touch on that after Cody's shot. But anyway, he got the second goal. So 2-6 for him on the day. Aidan O'Connor hitting 10 points for Limerick. Interestingly, even with Galan on the pitch, he was hitting the frees. He hit 7 of them. Galan himself hit 1-2, including that goal just to seal it towards the end of the game. Limerick, people have been making a bit about Skell. You know, their record wasn't good against the top teams since the Munster final of last year. And I talked about maybe some of their form tailing off, even at the tail end of the championship last year. I don't know if you can draw direct correlations between May of last year and what's happened early this season, but the reality is that Limerick got the job done against Kilkenny, was my assessment at least of the second live game this afternoon.
They did, but to be honest, I was very impressed with Kilkenny. Jeez, I was, okay. Because you have to understand, Limerick, by my count, put out 13 of their starters, their regulars. Yeah, which I would class as regulars, to be fair. That's who definitely going to feature in the Championship 15, if not 16. Kilkenny, by my count, now Morph, correct me here, please, right? Tallis, Garrett, Doyle, Conlon, Clifford, Moore. Those six players, the likelihood of them featuring in a championship on a regular basis is low. To be honest, I don't mean that in a disrespectful manner, but those spots are going to get filled up, I think, you know, with players returning, right? Mm. So for them and Corcoran as well, excuse me, for the way Kilkenny played, you know, with the clientele that the pitch, the new blood, you have to be delighted. And you asked me a question last week about Sheffield. His comments with regards to Richie Reid. I thought Corcoran was excellent today.
Yeah.
And you can see the way he put up with. You know, his opposite number was with who we all spoke about. But I don't know who the tough day at the office was. A tough day at the office dealing with like Sakodi, you know, bouncing around the middle there. But Corcoran, I thought, covered like left and right between 5, 6, and 7. He covered his positions great. His touch was excellent. He burst through tackles, heavy, heavy tackles for a young lad. Like I think, Murphy, if you're serious about business here, right, you're looking at him, can we keep him there? Can we keep him there?
Yeah.
No, that's what I'm looking at now. I don't know that kid. I don't know him. I haven't seen him hurling off a lot, but I'm looking at him now on evidence of what I saw today. And if you can survive there, you know, you'll survive when the ground gets better, conditions get better. And in the same breath, I have to say, Tallis, like, when you consider, and I know what it's like playing against them, Limerick, his mid-range puck out to midfield, particularly to Jordan Mullane, Kilkenny's boys, it was a huge platform for Kilkenny. Now, I know he made a couple of errors, which are his puck outs, right? But it stopped Kilkenny having to puck the ball long down top of their half-back line. It allowed Kilkenny to clear their half-back line and get into places where they could do damage one-on-one. So I have noticed, particularly, Kilkenny's Tallis puck out has to be commended, especially to midfield. It was excellent, you know what I mean? And that's a hard place to play because we know how much Limerick will target your puck out to turn you over. They use the puck out against you. Limerick will always say they'll shoot, and they'll keep shooting because even if they hit wides, they'll use your puck out to turn you over. and we've seen it numerous times. So for Talos to be able to take it on, and this is high risk, but very high reward, and we're talking milliseconds where he's nailed the puck out, perfect height, to King Kenny, to Jordan Mulay specifically, and they've gone and attacked. That's excellent. You know what I mean? So there was a great freedom about the way he approached the game today, I have to say. And the goals, what could you do with fairness? It was a bullet list. Sometimes you just can't stop them goals, right? So I think if you're Jerry Kling, you have to sit back and go, geez, I'm very happy with the way Aura has played. In the way of venue, tough crowd, tough pitch, against, you know, one of the greatest teams of all time, you have to be delighted, you know. And in similar breath, Limerick, a lot has been talked about the amount of games they've lost recently. But again, as I said earlier on, momentum is hard. It's hard to get, right? But it's very important to keep. So just to get a win against a good team and get the ball rolling once more. Get minutes into players again. Get Dan Morrissey back on the pitch. We saw more now of Cathal O'Neill. You know, the only concern you probably have going off is Sean Finn looked like to be injured. I could be wrong. And then with new blood, Aidan O'Connor played last year, but he's a guy, I'm putting an asterisk beside his name. Just so happened he was taking the freeze today. That guy is electric. He's electric. And he's the next Galan in there. Like a bit of confidence for him, you know, and he becomes another Galan in there. I mean, if you've Galan, O'Connor and Peter Casey inside, oh, Jesus, yeah. So, like, isn't it an awful thing to have to contend with?
You know, did you leave out the bull?
Sorry?
You just even left out the bull from that inside forward.
I use hypothetics. I know O'Connor had 12 on his back today. But, like, you could put him in a full forward, corner forward. You could bring Casey out the field. Your options become, you know, a lot higher. Because O'Connor, it felt like last year there was a bit of nervousness about him in the Limerick jersey. But from watching him last year into the club championship, into this year's inter-county league, he looks like he's going to step up. And he's got it all. He's a powerful man, two-sided, bullet of a shot, fast, extremely skillful. So he's like a prototypical Limerick inside forward. So as I said, yeah, to round it off, I think as a manager for both sets of teams, even though Derek Lane comes out with a loss like of, what, 6-7 points, I don't think he's upset. I think he's actually quite content with having gone toe-to-toe with potentially, I mean, this Murph, half his championship team. I'm not sure. You can correct me that, Nolan.
No, like, you're right. At the end of the day, like, the lads are under no illusion in that position. Like, when you look around the breakdown of the field, you're looking across, like, Garrett in a cornerback. Like, he's at the other side of me is Mikey Butler and Mikey Carey. Like, the two boys have been on the team for last year. We've all been there in that position where you know your position, that you're fighting for a jersey. And you potentially, like, at the end of the day, everybody has to start somewhere. Mikey Butler had to do the same thing. Mikey Carey had to. And they eventually, you know, put their names on it. It is a very difficult thing to do, though, as players start to come back. Like, Derek Corcoran, he was outstanding. Like, I mean, the thing is, Derek Corcoran, he was in with the panel a few years ago. Derek Corcoran hurled a Leinster final as well, I'm fairly sure. He's an outstanding player, but he was, like, for Ballyhale, I mean, the man is an absolute machine. And the thing is about him, Killian Corcoran, his brother, like, is the same size as him. The two boys are near almost for, only for the fact that they have two different numbers on the backs. It's very hard to tell the difference between two of them, from my perspective anyway. Darrow's outstanding today. You know, such a physical player, but great hands, great skill, very calm. He's kind of a typical Ballyhale player, like, just very calm on the ball, does the right thing with it. And performed really well. For me watching it, Kenny started really slow in terms of they hit a load of wides. I'd say they had five or six wides in the first 8 minutes. And I was going, oh, Jesus Christ, like, at least put a few of them over, because as this game goes on, Limerick are going to start to, you know, pull away from you, and you haven't even given yourself a platform to get into the match. But in fairness to them, they got into the match then, and it was tit for tat after that. They scored a few really good points. Their movement, the snapping of the ball around the field, I was really happy with. Yes, they made mistakes, but Limerick made mistakes as well. It's the time of the year for it. But I think there was a point, was around the 21st minute. I can't even remember who finished it off, but Kenny started it from the right corner back position, popped it around, moved it up the field. It went through about five or six players. It finished up in kind of the right corner forward position, and they popped it over the bar. It was such a well-worked play through, like, a really well-established Limerick team. I was really happy with that. The wides is the thing that I think Derek Ling will be looking at, going, lads, look at, like, if we're creating these chances. Like, Owen Cody hit a wide with a free 30 yards out in front of the goal. Now, granted, they were 6 points down at this stage. It was only kind of putting a gloss on it. But when you look back through the match, and Derek says, right, we lost the game by 7 points. We're not happy about that. But he's not scrambling to figure out where they could have made up those scores. Those scores were all around the field in terms of the wides they were hitting. I think both teams really benefited from it. Like, the interesting thing about what I think John Kiely's doing at the moment, they're putting out, Limerick, to me, are putting out the strongest team at the moment across the league in terms of your most established players. And for me, you know, you're always trying to look at where is each county at, like, what's their
what's their angle going into each game or into the league in general. And I think Kiley's just going back to basics. He's playing a lot of the established boys. He's playing your Keane Lynch. He's playing your Willow Dunhu and all these boys, right? Granted, Dan Morrissey came on today. But generally, the spine and the main part of this team are those lads who have 4 and 5 All-Irelands. And I think it's a simple case of that stat that you mentioned, Will, that, you know, the form last year after the Munster final really tailed. And it's a case of getting back to basics in terms of, we're not going to look at a lot of players. These are the boys most likely we're going to head into championship with, get a heap of hurling into these boys, and maybe have a bit more of a hard line with it. Like, at the end of the day, they underperformed by their own standard last year. That's the way they look at it. And I think Kiley will just be getting back to it, saying, look, at exactly as you said there, O'Connor's putting his hand up for a jersey. We'll have O'Brien coming back from Fitzgibbon. All these lads are going to be coming back into it. Dara Donovan's now back in contention as well. There's plenty of lads coming back. I think John Kiley wants to have that bit of steeliness, that real bit of, I suppose, cutthroat competition back into it. So for Kilkenny, for today, with their, you know, quite a few inexperienced players playing, like, you're never happy with a loss. But at the same time, the manner in which they went about it, I was like, yeah, you can hang your coat on that. They played well. They created a lot of chances. They hit the back of the net, you know, which is a good thing to be able to do, whether it's January, February, or it's July against Limerick. If you're hitting the back of the net, you're not doing a whole lot wrong. So, yeah, Derek, there's definitely things to work on coming away from the game. But I'll be honest, it was a better performance than I kind of thought. You know, there's potential there that if they didn't get to grips with Limerick, Limerick could steamroll them, depending on what Limerick turned up. You know, it was a dangerous match. You could have taken too much of a beating there today. But in fairness to every lad, they gave it a good crack. So I think both teams will take a nice bit from it, to be fair.
Yeah, especially after giving Limerick a 5-point head start early on in the game as well. It could have got messy real quick if Kilkenny hadn't been in the right zone here. The other thing about Limerick as well, Skell, they're the team with the break week, first week in Munster. So typically, if they want to go and have a go at this league final, they're the best team in terms of being able to use the break then just before they play in Munster. Some of the other teams will argue, and remember this happened last year, it was, if you've got a really intense first round game, maybe you're as well off not to go to a league final. Limerick don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I agree with you, but in the sense that it's good for the league, but in terms of championship, is it good to have, you know, 4 games in a row then in the Munster championship? We've seen teams that get towards the end of the Munster championship, and it is a war of attrition there. So Limerick, sometimes it has favoured them in the past, where they've had a break after round one or round two. You know, when I say favourites, you know, it's the draw, it's the way it fell. You know what I'm trying to get at here, but when they have to buy the first week, they have to go full duck or dinner from there on, all the way to the end of the championship, you know. So I don't think they'd be too concerned about the league, to be fair. Yes, they can go at it. They can go and try and win it, of course, having the break off, but they're going to have a heavy load in come Munster.
Yeah, true enough. Murph, what was your assessment of Limerick before we move off this game?
Look, they're just not ticking at the moment. Like, Keane Lynch was interviewed after the game, and he was just saying, look, they weren't happy, obviously, enough after the performance in Waterford. You know, nobody was really expecting that Waterford to turn over Limerick in that match, but Waterford just worked much harder, and I think that's one of the big things we're looking at the moment. We're seeing Limerick work kind of by their own standards, not very hard. They're working hard at certain times. We're seeing flickers of that tackling, that intensity, that moving of the ball, but it's like they're kind of playing in a third or fourth gear at the moment. It's a kind of a, you know, they're at a halfway house. I just can't see.
Stuttering.
But yeah, they're stuttering, exactly. But at the same time,
the same fluidity's not there.
It's not. Mm. But like, they're, I suppose the end game is to build towards that, in that they have it towards the Munster Championship. You don't really want it now, to be honest. It's the 8th of February. Truth be told, you don't really want the team absolutely ticking unbelievably at the moment, because you're probably peaking too early. But that's just where they are at the moment. You know, they have a lot of established players playing, but at the same time, they're not, by their own standards, how we've seen Limerick play over the last few years, where just teams couldn't lay a hand on them. They're just not at that. Like, every week they go out now, Limerick can be beaten. So each team will look at that saying, yes, let's go. But Limerick also will constantly improve the whole way now, heading towards championship. And that's the game. Like, nobody will remember any of this if Limerick come and perform in championship. This is all forgotten, so it doesn't matter. But where they are at the moment, they can go out any week and be beaten at the moment, because they're just not taken at the moment.
Yeah. If Waterford are going to stay up, it's about turning Walsh Park into points. And they've picked up 4 over the last couple of weekends. So that win against Limerick, followed up by the win against Offaly today, 119 to 16 points. This was far from a classic. Generally, it was kind of 2-3 points between the teams, but it turned into a bit of a battle of the free takers to a large extent as well. Ruben Halloran again, very impressive. He took his goal well on the overload for the Waterford goal in the second half, and he scored 112 in all, 9 frees and 365s. Adam Screeny scored 10 points, 8 frees, after being very impressive in putting UL through to the final of the Fitz during the week. So he'll be going to Croke Park for the final of that on Friday night as well. So Waterford win 119 to 16 points scale in the end. I think, again, Waterford will be happy to get 2 points up on the board. And I don't think they sparkled particularly during this game, but I felt they were worthy winners.
Those are certainly worthy winners. Like a big stat I always look at is the from play stat. So you'll often hear me revert to that. But the game was 177 points. That tells the story of the game in itself. You know, tough one to watch, tough one to break down. There wasn't much I could analyze, to be fair, because it was so... I thought the game was lethargic. Now, if I'm wrong here, disagree with me. Quoting Murph, but it was like lethargic. It wasn't sharp. You know, it was very scattered. There was a lot of lazy tackling. I thought hurdle tackling, body tackling, high tackling that just killed the fluidity of the game, whereby you couldn't get, you know, a bit of traction game whatsoever. And the best score of the game was the goal by Halloran. And again, he finished it low. Screening had the opportunity in the first half for the same thing for Offaly. Didn't do it high, you know what I mean? So that was the time when Offaly were at toe-to-toe at Waterford. So if you're going down into Walsh Park, you've got to take opportunities as they present themselves, because they won't come again. It's as simple as that, you know. So when he got in there, that's the kind of goal that Offaly needed, you know, to keep it Waterford. But
I was surprised that Screeny didn't go low scale. Like you think so too, because it felt like he'd shortened the grip first of all, and you're thinking, right, his kind of typical finishes across the goalkeeper to the other side. It suits him perfectly from there. And he just kind of seemed to snatch it slightly.
Yeah, I think first of all, it was the side he hit it off. So from his left side, it wouldn't be his most direct side. Off his right side, he's perfect in the low. His trajectory is perfect because his technique is well suited to that. And his left side is more of a looper striker. That's why you see him turn out and loop it over the bar. So I think for that shot, it was more of a technical issue as opposed to an error, if you like. But the fact that he's able to get in there, that was a high ball contested and get in, that's progress. You know what I mean? I had worries for Adam Screeny, to be fair. I think he's great skill. He has super potential, but I had worries in terms of the physicality. Because as I was saying earlier on, you know, the only really one-to-one positions you see now where man-to-man is in the full-back line, corner forwards and cornerbacks. That's where they go toe-to-toe each other and try to dispossess or take the ball off each other. So I was worried about his strength capabilities, as you could say, right? But he performed admirably. I think, you know, like Water management, Peter Quilby, happy enough. Would he have taken 4 points in the first two games? Absolutely. You know what I mean? For those last two games, completely, especially after the way they performed against Cork. You know, so I think, like I've referred to often, you know, often hear me say momentum, and the Cork game now was well forgotten, Will, to be honest. You know, Cork Quilby, a tough place to go, very expensive, suits Cork down to a T. Walsh Park suits Waterford down to a T. Close quarters, you know, a bit more physically contested. So it suits them lovely. Those two games came at the right time. The Limerick game was perfect. They put in a really good performance, a workmanlike performance, took care of Limerick, and then got through today. That was all today was about, if you ask me. Once that game started to, you know, feel like the type of game it was, where it was tight, tough, rugged, just get through it. Get through it, get your 2 points, and move on. So that's what they've done. So they're taking 4 out of 6. They'll have to be happy with that.
Yeah, I think so too. Murph, Éireann Daly was saying after the game, he felt maybe their execution was a little bit off. He felt that it did work well. Again, a bit like the Limerick game, they were happy enough to drop back, soak up a bit, take you on the counter-attack and move the ball through the lines. And they are actually usually fairly effective at that. There was a few of those that just kind of dropped. It worked well for the goal where they worked the overlap, but not necessarily clicking all the time. But there is potential there. When I see the way that Waterford played, if this does start to click a bit further down the road, they've got players who can carry the ball really, really well within that team.
Yeah, they do. It's one of the things with Waterford that they've always had that bit of those electric runners, like Caelum Lyons. Like Caelum Lyons has been just such a consistent player for them over the years. Like, and his presence within the team, it's just always, for me, improves Waterford across the board. Jamie Barron, Desi Hutchett, like you just think of the pace and the running and the energy that these boys have, particularly against Limerick. They really showed that. I think I mentioned it last week. I mentioned like Micheál Donoghue and Peter Queeley, the fact that, like, you know, they're not in their first seasons anymore, in that they've inherited these teams, maybe want to see of the clientele they have and what style of game can we play. And I think we mentioned about Micheál Donoghue, Peter Queeley in particular as well now,
I think we're starting to see the type of game that he wants to play and with the type of players that he wants on the field. Like, there's way more structure to what they're doing now. And that was the thing when we mentioned Watford previously and over previous years. It wasn't that we were deliberately wanted to try and be harder than Watford, because, like, the Munster Championship is always better and the All-Ireland Championship is always much better when you have a Watford team going really hard and their fans bring huge passion in it. But they just, you just didn't know what they were about. The style that they were playing, or lack thereof. We were looking at periods there of, and again, you know, when Davey was in charge, I remember one of the tactics they had was that I think they pucked it short to Tadhg DeBurca. I remember these players were just flooding up the field, and at one stage they had maybe 11 or 12 players in the far half, and you were just going, like, this isn't what Watford are about. What we're seeing at the moment, I think, is far closer to what the Watford is. Granted, the game was scrappy, absolutely. But you go back to Limerick the week previous, and you could see they were running with energy off the shoulder. Even when they were bottled up into tough positions, they were getting the ball out, or you could see what they're trying to do to work the ball out. So, like, this is a potentially very dangerous Watford team if they keep building the way they're building. I really do think that, you know, bolstered by the Ballygunner lads coming back, they do have a potential really good attack and threat up front, mixed with a fairly strong defence there as well. And then you have your usual suspects in the middle of Jamie Barron and these boys as well contributing. So, yeah, look, they're headed in the right direction. And look, I think the bottom line is that we're looking at a very more positive situation for Watford at the moment than we have in previous years, where it just looked like, Jesus, this year might get up and going for them at all. This year we're looking at them going, these boys could cause serious problems and they're headed in the right direction. So I just think from a general hurling point of view, it's brilliant to see the Watford potentially could be really building towards something good here.
Yeah, I think roughly that is pretty much all but confirmed their relegation down to 1B for next season, because Cork, Limerick, Galway, the first side of the break, it's going to be very tricky to pick out at least 4 points from that to stay up at this stage, because of the way teams have been beating each other so far in this league. Again, I think Galway are going to be fighting to try and stay up as well. The other thing for Offaly, I mentioned this a little bit last week, just they're missing so many players right down the middle of their team. So Donald Shirley's injured at the moment. He'd become the new six. Kieran Burke, who'd be first choice three, isn't there. Liam Hoare was injured this week, who'd been the first choice goalkeeper coming into the season. I know him and Mark Troy might swap around. They're just about getting Dan Burke back to fitness at the moment, but they're missing key players right down the spine of that team. Killian Sampson, I think, is out for another 3 to 4 weeks, who was arguably Offaly's best player last season. So even when there's some players like Screeny or maybe Deignan who might step forward and get them scores currently, the lack of firepower was a problem today. And I think the lack of some of those key players means that other players have had to switch in to fill in the gaps, and they're not maybe at their most optimum positions at the moment. So it's been a tricky first few weeks. Heavy defeat, obviously, against Tipperary, but outside of that, did okay against Kilkenny and did generally, I think, reasonably okay against Waterford today. I think 6 points is about an honest reflection on the way the game went, but they were within touching distance for a lot of that game. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be a real, real tough one. And I, again, just hope that Captain Charlie Mitchell is going to be okay. Again, I believe a heart issue was picked up on a scan and the medical team being incredibly careful at the moment. So I don't know if he's going to play this season, which, again, would be a huge blow, because that's awfully starting 14 among their most important players too. So it just seems, for whatever reason, a mix of injuries and bad luck and everything else, they're just missing quite a few players. And it's difficult when you step up to 1A. It's even when you watch some of the 1B games at the weekend, you just think there's a little bit more space there. And I know a Clare listener has sent us a message about whether they might feel undercooked in Munster now. In 1B, you get a little bit more time. In 1A, you will get turned over. You'll get teams who'll be all over you, even when it comes to league. It's difficult when it's lads stepping in early on in their career. But well done to Ben Keneally, particularly 90th appearance for Offaly today, which is some innings. And he had a very, very good game, I thought, today as well. So cornerback, centre-back, full-back, that boy can do it all. Right, that Clare supporter made a fair point as we go towards 1B. And it is Sean who got in contact. Was at the Clare game today. There were lads I'd never heard of from the arse ends of East Clare. Speaking about his own county, this isn't me. And still after about 10-15 minutes, it just looked like a training game for Clare. Do you think this might mean that we go into the Munster Hurling Championship, we won't be at the pitch of the teams like Cork, Tip, etc.? Is that potentially an issue, Skell? You know, they went through down today, which would be an expectation. Again, you're talking about the levels here between a team who were All-Ireland champions 2 years ago versus a team competing in Joe McDonagh. Naturally, expect there to be a gap. Clare didn't go with as strong a team today as they did even last week. Is there the potential that Clare breezed through most of these games? And then next thing, you're trying to catch up with the Munster teams who've been playing at a higher level.
I think in the old league structure, where if you were in 1B and got to elevate up into the top, remember the knockout stages, you were part of the knockout stages, that was fine. I think in today's format, if there is potential for it to happen. I always be a big advocate for the lesser teams to try cut their cloth against the big teams, because Ireland sharpens Ireland. So The more you pay these play these big teams, the more you try to get up to their level. I suppose the same can be said in the opposite way. Like, if you're playing teams that are well beneath your level and you're not exactly exerting yourself too much and you're not going to the well, you know, for 70 minutes, you know, you could be slightly undercoached. Now, that can work both ways. And it just depends. And we won't know that because we don't have a crystal ball. It depends how their year pans out. If it pans out very poorly, we can look back and say, well, it was the way the league form and they didn't come into this championship form too well. If they win the Bloody All Ireland, we'd say, well, they were able to jog through the league and get through the championship. So I can't tell you. The question was, can it potentially happen? The answer is yes, it can potentially happen. Now, will it? Some counties you'd have more concern for than others, right? But I just don't think when you have Brian Lowen over a team, I can't see that happening, Will. I just can't see, like, a manager of his you know, his ability and his mentality. I don't see a Clare team ever coming to a Munster Championship whereby they're always hyped for it. They're always hyped regardless of their form previously. I can't see it happen. So when you're talking specifically about Clare, the answer I'll give you is no, it's not a concern. But it could potentially happen, it could, but I just don't see it happening Clare.
Okay. What do you reckon, Murphy? I mean, there's still, not to talk down 1B entirely, they will get competitive games when they play against Dublin and against Wexford. They will have a league final most likely at the end of this, assuming the Clare get to the final. It's maybe not the barren wasteland that it's made out to be somewhat.
No, like, and I think the comment that was mentioned there that you read out, Will, as well, was that I suppose that Clare today were playing a few lesser known players, but like it's no slight and down whatsoever, but this is the opportunity where Brian Lowen can maybe open up the taps a small bit there to let a few more lads step in. Like, this is the beauty of it for Clare being in 1B. Look, I mentioned it last week, I think it actually could suit Clare a bit more this year. Like we've seen with some teams that potentially dropping down into 1B, albeit at the time you're very disappointed, you're after getting relegated and so on, but it maybe gives you that buffer zone whereby, you know, you don't have to play your Tony Kelly's week in and week out and your Shane O'Donnell's and these lads because you're treading water in 1A, or you just don't have the players at the time to stay afloat in 1A. But I agree with Skettle in that they may come a small bit ring rusty into the Munster Championship because the other teams are, you know, playing week in, week out really tough. But I think the positive for Clare is that they'll come into the Munster Championship probably very fresh. Like, they'll be able to manage the workload of the players really well. And I wouldn't have too much questions over the likes of, you know, Tony Kelly and these boys being ring rusty or anything like that. Like, they have the clientele there and they have the people that one match, I think, in the Munster Championship could blow that out of the system. So I don't think it'll have long-term effects in it. But I agree with Skettle, like, time will tell. We're great in the GAA or great in the hurling world for looking back and saying, oh, sure, no wonder. Exactly as Skettle said. Oh, no wonder they didn't do well. They should win 1B and they couldn't get up to stand. Or, sure they had, like, you know, because, yeah, it's just a conversation that's had. Time will tell, but I think it'll stand to. I think, to be honest, Clare will come in. And I would never look at the fact that, you know, they're playing maybe lesser known players in certain matches. Like, that's just the name of the game. You have to introduce these players at some stage. So I wouldn't have too much fears for Clare at all.
No, John Connellan back as well. I winced, Skettle, when you told us about the finger injury he'd initially picked up. So obviously put him out for quite a while, but good to see him back. That was a nasty one last year, wasn't it?
Super. When I heard the extent of it at the time last year, I thought that's, you know, my mind said to me, that's him finished. You know, because injury is very hard to accommodate in hurling. I think he survived in football, Will. He survived in rugby, so other sports, but in hurling, whereby every digit is so important. You know what I mean? I thought, yes, he's done. But, like, so I'm happy to hear he's back. So fit, healthy, everything is intact, thank God, and he's got his good season.
Murph and I were both watching Wexford Carlow on Saturday evening as well. By the way, there's one thing I like about when the season wasn't as condensed as it was. It's great that you've got break weeks in one of the two where football can disappear for a week and hurling can take complete prominence, and then the hurling can be away and there can be loads of football games in the telly next week. It meant we could watch a load of games this week. But Wexford winning against Carlow in the end, 228-121. That maybe feels a little bit harsh in Carlow, I think, because Wexford basically won the last quarter of the game 110 to 2 points, which included a very late penalty from Mark Fanning, which has been a familiar story this year. It happened in the Antrim game, started the season as well. But Wexford coming through in the end, with Simon Roach scoring 14 points, 10 of them coming from frees. Ross Banville had that goal that went right down the middle in the first half, which maybe Carlo will feel they could have stopped. And Lee Chin coming off the bench to get 2 points as well. It wasn't a vintage display from Wexford, Murph, but I guess grand scheme of things, they'll be looking at this going, Clare and Dublin now to come. They've beaten the teams they would have been expected to beat, two of those games at home, and Lee Chin is back in and on the pitch for a few minutes in this game too.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, all positives. Like they've done the hard work so far. They've won the games, like you said, they're meant to win. But like at the same time, this game was a lot closer than the final score points towards. Like the first half of this game, there was nothing between the two teams. The goal was a killer in the first half again. Like, you know, I just think Carlo looked forward at that and go, Jesus, you know, we could have possibly saved that one and, you know, potentially are in a better position. Again, the penalty, there's potentially could stop the penalty as well. But look,
it has to be saved. Stop.
Yeah.
Well, no, please,
yeah. That's the goalkeeper union I was speaking. But yeah, look, I mean,
the goalkeeper union would have defended him. He wouldn't have went, just, he has to stop that.
Yeah.
Well, the retired goalkeeper union is a little bit harsher than the current one. But yeah, like, I mean, look, at the end of the day, Wexford will come away and say, look, job done. And again, yeah, we'll refocus for Dublin and the likes. But at the same time, you know, in the first half, that was a very tight game at home as well. Like, Carlow are a good team and they have good players there as well. But at the same time, Wexford, in their own opinion, will be looking to take bigger scalps during the year. And, you know, I think the performances would have to be a lot more decisive to be that optimistic in the future if you think you're going to be taking bigger scalps when it comes to the Leinster Championship. So, look, they went out, really, look, they closed out the game. I suppose that's the other way you can look at it as well. But credit to Carlow here as well. Like, Carlow were well in this game for 45, 50 minutes. They just didn't have it to stick the pace towards the end. And the introduction of Lee Chin, like, one of the points he got was really good as well. So, like, again, when Lee Chin comes back into this Wexford team, it's nearly worth 8 or 9 points to them. Like, I mean, not to say that he physically scores them, but Jesus, he makes some difference. So, Carlo can take a nice bit from it, but Wexford, they got the wins, they'll be happy enough.
Would you be worried for Wexford?
We had someone ask this last week, by the way. I think it was on the YouTube comments.
Is
there a risk they could go into the Joe McDonagh? I don't think they'll lose enough games to go down. I don't. But I do appreciate that they look more vulnerable to taking a bad result, maybe even than they had in the last few years. And I'm sure people go, oh, what about the Westmeath game? What about the Antrim game? They have had a few shaky results. There's no getting around that. But I can't see them losing to, say, both Offaly and Kildare.
This is the first year now in a while that I've looked at them and think, geez, I'm worried for them.
Like, when you look at, like you're saying, Will, you can't see him, losing to who, Offaly and Kildare. Would you consider that Antrim nearly bet him the other day and Kildare went out and bet him by 10 points today? Kildare went out and bet Antrim. Do you know? So, like, Kildare in particular, like, I just think Kildare, they're an improving team. Like, you know, they're dangerous. So, I get what you, no, you are right. Like, they just look more vulnerable at the moment. I do think the likes of, you know, I don't know, is Mikey Dwyer, is he coming back? I think he had a bit of an injury, knee injury there. Maybe he got an operation or something, because I know at the club championship, he was injured that way. But Keane Byrne as well has come back as well. They do have players to come back. You just wonder, like, you know, stranger things have happened. Like, but
I think they'll get a bit slicker going on. And I appreciate they might be a little bit short up front. Obviously, losing Rory O'Connor is massive. We've signposted that a few times. Why are you worried about them, Skell? Just the nature of the performance. I felt they were okay, but they weren't quite doing things at the level that they will be later in the year.
Yeah, see, when people think of Wexford, sometimes they can be guilty of thinking of them back in 2019, you know, in 2020, like, during the Leinster campaign, and say when they won that one. But have they replaced the big players that got them over the line that time? Now, they still have some of the big players, absolutely, but will they have they replaced O'Connor, O'Keefe, like Liam Ryan, where is he? Let's see, like the 40s. Have they replaced? The answer is no. It's just no. So when I see someone like Wexford, who would class themselves as not first, but vying for second, if not third, in Leinster, I just don't think they have the firepower at the moment. And there's a huge dependency on Lee Chin. Like, the game last night was tit for tat. To be honest, it was. Lee Chin enters the forward, game changes. That's what happens. Game changes, and that's how important he is. But against the better teams, like, I know what I say for a fact, Kilkenny and Galway will have him marshalled. You know, to a point whereby he won't be scoring 216 or two. These crazy scores we've seen before. And I wonder, is there slight concern over the manner in which they're winning? They won the last book of the game against Antrim. You know, they limped over last night. To be honest, they limped last night. They did, like.
Yeah, and they didn't put away a down in any type of impressive manner like we saw from
Clare. 2 points in the last 2 minutes, we learned it. Yeah. In soccer time. They got the last 2 points. Like, jeez, I'm not giving a very good explanation. I'm not feeling it. You know what I mean? They don't feel like they're playing at a level that they can improve, you know, to contend with Kilkenny and Galway in Dublin. I just don't see it.
You're not convinced. That's the
no,
reality.
I'm not. Yeah, that's why I asked the question, like, just to get your point, because am I skewed? Have I not seen enough of them? You know, are the results, am I putting too much value on them? You know, I'd be concerned, and I'd be very interested to see where we are in 4 weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, will they make the final? I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, it's make or break for them after the break. Got Dublin and Clare. If they don't get results in them, it could well see the other teams be qualified for a final. So,
if Clare played them last night, no, they'd kick the shit out of them.
Yeah, they would have.
Straight up. They'd be 12 points, like 13 points. Straight up, in the way they're playing at the moment. Murph, why are you smiling?
Nothing.
You're reading your WhatsApp there or something.
I am smiling.
I'm glad it was a WhatsApp and not him going, Keith Rosser's going to stick this up in the dressing room wall, what Scale's saying about February.
No.
That doesn't bury the lead, because again, this was the delayed game on TG Carr, so caught this before coming out of work earlier on, and that is result of the weekend, Kildare 3-21, Antrim 20 points. First time in almost 50 years that Kildare have won a game in the second flight of the National Hurling League. You're going to hear lots of this year. You know, first time they've played in Leinster in over 20 years. All this type of stuff. You know, back up in Division 1B. What it means after the year they've just had. Skell maybe got to meet some of these lads when the medals were given out in Kildare a couple of weeks ago when he was one of the guests of honour. But Kildare win 3-21 to 20 points. Maurice Curtin did a lot of the damage. He scored 2-2 and he also laid on the goal for Dolan as well. That spell for Kildare where they got the three goals in the 15-minute spell, that set up the win at Newbridge. This feels massive, Skell. It really, really does, because Antrim are the team that Kildare want to surpass. If they're going to get above them, they need to get above Antrim.
It's a massive in both directions, though, Will, isn't it?
It is. I don't want to drag Davey into this too much, but
we're talking about the respective counties and the results, right? And like, as we sat back, and remember we sat here last week and we said, we were slightly concerned for Wexford. And we were talking about the venues, and we said, if this venue, you know, Antrim don't travel well, we were saying, is the chance for Kildare, we said, and here we are, 10-point victory. And it's massive for both teams in the sense that Kildare, it's a step in the right direction at top level. You know, I know it's a league game, and we'll always play down the league, and Ben O'Connor is the best man at it. But at the end of the day, any results you can get when you come up to levels and get against a team who've been contesting the Liam McCarthy for a good while, go and get it. And it's a very kind of fruitful operation for them at the moment, because they know their efforts are being justified, to be fair. So again, we talked about momentum. It's huge. And in the same breath, we sat here last year, lads. Remember we sat here after Antrim played Offaly in Tullamore. Was it Tullamore, Will?
Mm-hmm.
And they were septic. They were septic. Yeah.
They were beaten off the pitch in that regular league game, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'll admit here, I have a first man to admit it. I did not see a minute of this game, but the scoreline suggests to me, and when I go through the stats, it scored 5 points in play in the forwards, and they're beating 10 points. That looks like a pretty bad result to me, this. That's a pretty bad performance. So there has to be concern here, huge concern. And things will happen now as the weeks go on. Stories will come out, don't you know, well, that's about maybe how heavy they're being trained or the manner in which they're trained or something like that. And it's just not a good look for Antrim, especially for a county who needs a bit of traction. They're always stop-start. Great at home the odd time, flounder again when they go away. This is a game they should have won, that. They should be winning this game, Antrim. With the history they have and the players they have, they should be winning, but they didn't. And that's concerning.
Yeah, and look, I appreciate the first two games were difficult and they can feel plenty of grievance with the way the game ended in Wexford week one. They then lose to Clare, who they wouldn't be expected to beat. Yeah. And now here they are losing to Kildare. This should have been 2 points on the board, and then you set up for the rest of it and you see how close you can get to the top of the table. The reality is now, Murph, Antrim are actually fighting relegation.
They are, yeah. And like, what did you say? It was the first time they won a second flight match in 42 years?
48 years.
I think in the 4 or 5 years, how long are we doing this pod? This the first weekend I got all my predictions right. I was actually, it was the only time I was like, I want to mark this down. Because I said Kildare last week, off the back of seeing kind of Kildare perform over the last year, let's say. And particularly with Brian Dowling over them, they really have something about them.
Not to cut across you here, but that's some weekend for him. Kieran's on the Saturday.
Unreal.
Kildare today.
Oh, he's out, and he's an Arsenal fan as well. So it's just all around. Brian Dowling is just a great man. But he, it is. It's a fantastic. And Kieran's had a mighty win as well. Like, you know, Kieran's performed really well. So
knocking this isn't the Brian.
They knocked over the fence. They did so well. They tore the fence down.
Yeah.
But I watched Antrim against Clare. And granted, you know, there wasn't much to it. But like, Skell, you're talking there saying what they scored 5 points from play or whatever it was against Kildare. Like, in the first half, against Clare, they, I think from 8 to 12,
I think the first score they got was in was the last book of the game before halftime. Like I was watching, there was nothing coming. I think they scored 6 points in the first half. There was no cut to it. Like, remember we were watching the matches over the last few years, and anyone go to Corrigan Park. Granted, they played in Cushendall against Clare, but anyone going to Corrigan Park, it was Jesus. Like, you weren't getting out of there like just walking a victory. It was nothing simple about it. Whereas it was a very easy win for Clare there at the weekend. Clare lost, I think it was one of Brian Lowen's first league matches. Well, maybe it wasn't one of his first ones. Remember to play John Conlon at centre back and they lost the match. And the people were talking about this is, Lowen will be gone, the whole lot. That was the antrim that were, you know, really going out and giving it a crack. But I just, when I saw that match, I said, geez, these boys aren't really, there's nothing here to really get on board with at the moment. Whereas Kildare seem to be getting the most out of themselves. Yeah. So sometimes, you know, that can count for a lot, where when the game is in the melting pot and there's a bit of a tipping point, the most positive team that wants to go out and maybe get a score gets that momentum, the word we were talking about earlier in the show. So it is a big window for Kildare. It's mighty. Like, again, probably the other side of it is to say, similar to the Wexford-Carlow match, you know, 10 points probably maybe did flatter them as well, but they were fully deserving of the victory and fully warranted of the victory as well. So look, it's a huge one for them, and it looks like their year will be generally very positive. Like, there's a lot of work to do, there's a lot of games to play, and there will be a few really tough matches along the way. But little markers like that following on from the Joe McDonnell last year, it's big for Kildare, and it'll bolster the likes of the good works that's going on in Naas and hurling and different things as well. So it's a great victory for them.
It's a huge boost. I think if you're Kildare right now, you circle one fixture for the entire summer. That's last round of the Leinster Championship, Offaly at home, which will be basically a relegation playoff game. And I think it didn't quite happen to Connacht in the Premier League quarter final for them against Dublin. And this is now a landmark result at home to kind of hang your hat on for the year, which is really big for them for the rest of Division 1B. I don't know. I sat in a panel 2 years ago. We've spoken with Davey so many times in this pod, but I remember there was a conversation when he got appointed, and the feeling within the room in the studio when we were having the chat was, this is actually really exciting. Antrim are showing all this ambition and this is where they want to go and they're getting Davey. And I kind of said at the time, well, what is the ambition? Are Antrim good enough to actually get better than Wexford and Dublin and start challenging for the top three in Leinster? To me, that always seemed a little bit fantastical. And if you're bringing in a high-profile management team, the one thing you don't want to do is slide the other way. And the reality is now that their championship status changed last year. They're down to the Joe McDonough for this season. They're now struggling in Division 1B. It's going to be a fight now at this stage to not end up in the bottom two with the way the league has been restructured. The reality is, Skell, they haven't improved in the last 2 years. They're going the other way.
God, no. Which is God, no. They're not at all. I can't speak for what decisions the Antrim County Board or the Hurling Board they make, or what analysis they do when appointing people, but just, if you're looking for, you know, a rejuvenation in your county, sometimes it's better to look within than look beyond. You know, sometimes it's better to work from within than work from beyond. And when that appointment was made, I just said, that just didn't sit well for Antrim. Because I would have always said, you get a short-term bounce, but a long-term kick. You know what I mean? It's like, so, and the kick is not given, it's taken, I'm afraid. So at the moment, the results have been very poor. Let's be frank about it. They've been very poor. And the excuses have been, you know, they've been noted. They've been noted publicly. They're going to come again. They'll come again. So at the end of this league campaign, we'll get some sort of excuse or reasoning. And I can't see this relationship ending in a pretty
form. The only one excuse they can't wash anymore, because Davey mentioned this a few times, where he was like almost at a loss about the fact that they could be excellent in Corrigan Park, and then when they go away from home, they don't perform. He's now had long enough with this group, and I'm sure there are sports psychologists that come in as part of that group and all sorts of people in the backroom team. They need to find a way where they can't just be vulnerable away from home. Mm-hmm. So it's not good enough to be, we're good at home, we're useless away.
Yeah. If that's the excuse and it's still apparent in the team, that's a major mental frailty. But again, as you said, that's gone. Like, you know what I mean? Recognize it, move on. Similar as what you said, Murph, about Ben O'Connor and, you know, the second 35 minutes of the Ireland final, that was probably met head on. And it's tough love. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Recognize it, you know, accept it, move on.
Yeah.
You know, and fix it. So, like, Cork are they're in the process of fixing it. They're putting down results, basically. Antrim are fixing nothing at the moment. They're fixing nothing. Mm. You know, like, if you ask any Antrim player, regardless of their form, regardless of the setup, if you ask them, can we go down to Kildare and win the game? Yeah, they'd all say yes. Yeah. Would they expect to win it? They'd say yes. So the disappointment, I'd say, is huge. It's fast in Antrim at the moment, and whether it be within the squad, beyond their supporters. They need to find something. And I don't know, where that rejuvenation is going to come from, I'm fucking clueless. Not a clue. Like, is that a change of coaching management staff? Is that, you know, someone from within get this ball rolling again? I don't know. It just seems like it's a tough situation to assess now and to fix.
Yeah. The way Division 1B sits then, so you've got Clare and Wexford have both got 3 wins from 3. Dublin, this was their break week, so they've got 1 win, 1 defeat from their first 2 games. They lost to Clare in the first game. Carlow have got 2 points on the board after 2 games, as do Kildare. Antrim have lost their first 3, as have Down. So both of them prop up the table on 0 points. Down on minus 41 scoring difference, not helped by the game against Clare today. And Antrim on minus 25. What's been happening in Division 2 across the weekend? Well, across Saturday and Sunday, Kerry got themselves a big win. So they've got 2 wins and 1 draw. They drew at Westmeath last week, but they won against London very handsomely, 5-21 to 1-21. Goals in the first half from Casey, from Monsell, Slattery and Jordan Brick, really setting them up for a big win against the Exiles who'd come over there. Leash's break week, so they've got 2 wins and 2 so far, but they had a break coming into this one. Westmeath, 2 games played, they've got 3 points. They won against Meath. Something we might return to, comments made by the Meath the hurling manager Johnny Greville after the game. Westmeath winning 25 points to 119. He feels the one thing that the Hurling Review Committee haven't been doing is reaching out to counties like Meath, who found themselves in the middle, where they're not a developing county, or they're not maybe a growing concern to try and get hurls into hands, but it's very difficult for them to try and bridge the gap with the higher teams. So he was making that point. It's like every resource is going into Meath to try and improve the hurling, but at the same time, he feels they need a little bit of extra help. So that might be something we could discuss maybe during the break week as well, as they lost out in that game. And the other game was Derry against Mayo, where Shea Casty scored both goals for Derry as they beat Mayo by 225 to 20 points. So that means in Division 2 at the bottom, you've got Mayo propping up the table with 1 point, as are London, and you've got Derry above them who've got 2 points from their 3 games so far. I didn't actually mention the table in Division 1, which I may as well do. They say you shouldn't really look at the tables until probably 4 games in, but here we are with most teams having played 3. Cork, 3 wins from 3, 6 points on the board. Tipperary have got 2 wins from 3, they're on 4, as are Waterford. You've got Limerick below them on 2, as are Kilkenny, and Galway and Offaly prop up to the table, 0 points so far. Right, this is probably going to be out when people are, we've got very dedicated listeners who are probably waiting for this to drop in podcast form right about now. Are the Pats going to do it, Skell, before we finish up here?
I'm always confident and borderline arrogant when it comes to the Patriots. That's up against it.
That's the exact opposite of being confident and arrogant.
Completely. Jimmer Lutman, he rocked to the turtles and said, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
I can answer that today.
He's like, we might do it.
I'm expecting our defense to fuck them up. That's number one. Okay. But I'm worried our offense can't do the same. So, yeah. I think it's going to be low scoring affair. 17-10.
Okay. To give an exact prediction as well. Murph, on a scale of 1 to 10, how little do you care about the Super Bowl?
I didn't know it was on until I saw him wearing a Pats jersey. Right, I know, I saw it was on. Do you know why? Because I see it on the, I see it when I go on to Sky Sports. I have a look and I can see the whole, Super Bowl build-up. It's been on for the last 2 weeks. Like the Super Bowl build-up, however. So I know that's happening there. The biggest thing I took an interest in is that Green Day are playing the halftime show and they're probably just going to abuse Trump for the whole thing. So that's one part. I was like, right, that'll be interesting enough now. But no. I'd like to actually have an interest in it, but I just don't.
On the count of three, go Pats.
That's it. Come on. I got during the week.
I'm saying neutral.
I got a call from Ireland AM to ask would I go on to a Super Bowl show this morning. They were doing a Super Bowl show, and I said, the guy Ollie, he's a gent. He texted me and he was like, geez, would you want to come on? I was like, he said, I heard you're a huge fan. And I was like, I really think you're talking about Owen Murphy here, because I'd bluff you. And I'd come on and I'd bluff the life out of you. And I talk about Tom Brady and I talk about the Seahawks. I talk about whatever. But yeah. I said, I don't even watch it. So in fairness, he was like, I appreciate your honesty.
you've saved me quite a bit of time. As someone who's produced shows before, that's exactly what you want. You want someone to go, actually, this is Owen Murphy's number. Give Owen Murphy a shout.
Yeah, yeah. And he did actually say, no, Ollie wouldn't be into hurling, and say that much. Mm-hmm. But he was like, Grand, I'll give Owen a shout. I said, well, he's going to be in the Gaelic ground, so maybe don't give him a shout. He's not available. But another day.
Yeah. Another day indeed. We'll have another day next week for a pod. James Skell, thanking you, sir.
James, here we go. Go Pats.
Paul Murphy, we'll see you next week.
Go Seahawks. Good luck.
The Hurling Pod.
On Off the Ball.
With Apple Green. Making every journey better.